to another episode of The High Ground. This is Sal, back in here with Ryan.
Hello.
How are you doing today? And we got a special guest, always a special guest, whenever Jerry Boger comes around. He is a director of environmental safety management.
Yep.
And basically he's our safety supervisor.
Usually when I show up, everybody scatters. They don't want to be around.
And that has nothing to do with his job title.
You know, we poke a lot of fun at each other here in the office and the whole company. It truly is a family. But this is one topic where sometimes it feels like we hate to say we overemphasize it, but I don't know that we can.
Correct.
And so, Jerry, tell us a little bit about what you do and what your role is with keeping us safe and trained at Premier Ag.
So basically, keeping our training in compliance, if we do have a situation, a spill or something or accident, I'm in touch with the local fire departments, or I'm our company on-scene coordinator. Brian Scheid and I both would be out there working with the regulatory people, getting it cleaned up. Sad to say, we've dealt with several of these over the years. So I know a lot of the emergency response people on a first name basis, and they know what I do to help, which, and I guess in a way that's a benefit, because they know we're trying to clean it up and we want to protect the environment and the safety of the community as well. So it helps a lot that they know, oh, okay, he's there on scene. We know what he's done in other incidents, other spills. So it helps out.
Well, that's kind of toward the, so that's toward the end when things have gone wrong. Accidents do happen.
Correct.
And but you do a lot of things with, we say compliance, but it's kind of a voluntary.
Right. We participate with a national organization called Responsible Ag. It was actually established by the ag industry, and working with the regulators to come up with a program. Over the past few years, you know, we've realized how important it is for the community, our employees, and the environment to be safe and keeping them safe. So with this, we bring everything in compliant to the federal level, whether it's OSHA, EPA, DOT, Homeland Security. And we're there. You go through a training class to become certified auditor, which is about a four-day training course, and you're actually trained at a retired ag facility. So you're going through, you do everything from the office clerical to the shop to the dry fertilizer building or the chemical building. And then after going through that course and you get your credentials, then you either, one, you're a public auditor where you can be out to help other ag industry, which is what I am, or you can also be a certified auditor for within your company to be able to go through and audit and make sure we're in compliant with other federal regulations.
In a lot of industries, that's what they'll do. It's almost like self-policing.
Right. Correct.
Is it policing our own ranks? Because I know we have competitors in the industry, but yet we're all in the same boat where it comes to trying to make sure that this ag input industry,
right? Yeah,
but you just don't work with ag. You also work with our energy division across the whole corporate level.
Correct.
But we do all these things just to minimize the risk of something major or minor ever happening.
Right, right. So, yeah, keeping the employees safe, we want them to go home at the end of the day just like they came to work. So doing that, keeping things in compliant, like you said, it's regulations change, and it's changing even more so as we speak throughout the years. So we're constantly updating the responsible ag and knowing what to do as far as cleaning up situations or what we need to inspect and look for at the site. It's really good auditing format. Even if you're not doing just ag, doing that same philosophy on LP facility or a liquid fuel facility, you're looking for a lot of the same OSHA compliance, fall, you know, slip, trips, and falls type thing.
So, which in our business, it goes everything from slips, trips, and falls to managing some of the products, like with anhydrous training. I know that you're talking about you've done every year you do anhydrous training at the branches. Mm-hmm. And for those of our listeners that aren't familiar, can you explain a little bit about what anhydrous does and how safe it is to use when you use it?
Correctly, yeah. So anhydrous ammonia is probably the most toxic chemical we would have on our property. It's an inhalation hazard, but handled safely and stored in its contents in its container in a liquid form, it's a safe product. And it's still today the most economical form of total nitrogen that the farmer can use on the field and for his crop. But what I do is try to work with the local fire departments in our communities. We have our facilities, and it doesn't really need to be our facility. There's times I've opened this up for training for anybody that not necessarily our customers. They could be another competitor. Our staff here, the upper management staff and the CEO, wants everybody to handle this product safely to help the community and help themselves. So training
when ammonia gets loose, it becomes everybody's problem.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm sure people have seen the situation up in Chicago a few years back that hit national news. So by training the fire departments at the local level, when they see that white bottle on the running gear going by to the farm, either behind a pickup or behind a tractor and toolbar, we have a cutaway training tank. And so we basically open it up, show them on the inside of this tank that we've taken out of service and have cutaway, so they know what the internal workings are. And I start to explaining to him the pop-off valves, what it does.
Go ahead. What does that do? Tell us about it.
So the pop-off valve is on the back side of the tank, and it's always in the vapor space. And so we fill the wagons to 85% capacity, and then if something would happen that if we fill them too full by accident and the temperature heated up and the sun got on it, it would relieve pressure, and that pop-off valve would release vapor into the atmosphere. So by having it filled to 85%, if we fill it on a cool day when it's 40 out, and then that wagon stays there until we're ready to use it, and let's say it gets 75, 80 degrees, hot, sunny day, humid, by keeping it at 85%, that pop-off valve shouldn't go off. So then that's always in the vapor space. So if the wagon would get rolled over in an auto accident on its side, by being in the vapor space, it's made to relieve pressure. Well, that liquid, it'll start relieving liquid ammonia outside the tank. So knowing that, for them to know when they see that happening in an accident situation, the fire department knows how to react and what to do as far as controlling the situation. Then we've got the other valves on the tank where it determines whether it has a drop tube in the tank on whether it's a liquid valve or a vapor valve. And then they're color-coded by regulation, state law. The yellow ones are vapor, and the orange valve is the liquid valve. And usually that's the first valve on the tank. So in the normal working condition, if you open that valve, that's what the product's going to come out. If it's rolled over on the side, and if the wagon was 85% full, all three of those valves could be live with product. So if the wheel would happen to spin open in an accident with dirt and mud caked in, then the fire department knows, you know, what to do and how to handle that and how to control the situation.
But there's a lot of redundancy.
Oh yeah.
There's a whole lot of redundancy and there's a lot of events that have to go wrong.
Correct.
Before there is a problem. And it's not just the actual, using this example, I mean, you've got maintenance standards that they have to every year. They check tires, they check wheel bearings, they check hitches. It's just amazing how much preventive maintenance I think that you guide for the company just to make sure that we don't get in those situations.
Right, yeah. And then we're also governed by the Indiana State Chemist, who will also come around. He tries to get around once every 2 years. With the last couple of years the way it's been tough. But he'll go around and do a complete walkthrough, check everything. All the safety devices that we use for ammonia, whether it's at the riser and the hoses that we use to fill, or a lot of the equipment on the ammonia wagon itself, are dated, and they have to be removed by that certain time frame. And that's something I check. The employees, when they do their, you know, during the winters when we usually do the complete maintenance, they're checking those, removing those if they get to that expiration date. So yeah, there's a lot of activities and a lot of things go into that.
You talked about the energy side and the agronomy side. There's a grain component as well that you guys are oversighting with the safety side, and also outside people on the grain as well. I mean, we've been a part of donating the rescue tubes that Correct. Folks use, and Brian highlighted those last time he was on as well. But we've done that, getting fire departments
right.
equipped with those as well. So.
Yeah, so I worked with another co-op in the state, the risk coordinators, and they've brought their safety entrapment trailer down, and we've done some one-on-one training with some local fire departments, which is kind of neat because they'll actually put you in a mock little tank, and then they use this tube and show how that, and they can use their hard hat or a helmet to help scoop out to get around that, and once they get it in the tube and a vac, so yeah.
And there's an explosion piece with grain as well. If you just want to touch on that, just briefly, yes, I know yes. we didn't talk about that.
So the dust control and making sure things are explosion proof, all the electrical and stuff in the grain facility, and then keeping the dust to an eighth inch or less on everything. I know a lot of companies will use some type of mineral oil to coat the grain when the grain comes in to control the dust quality within the building. So having most of our structures are outside, which helps because all of our legs and everything are outside. They're not inside a old concrete house like we used to see a grain elevator. If you go out west through Kansas and Nebraska, you see a lot of those old concrete structures. So that helps to keep the dust down. You don't have as much to think about, but you still have cautious and things. We've done walk-arounds with our insurance, and they've been really impressed on how we take the proactive approach on keeping our employees and the work area and the community safe.
It's neat to see the training, the application of the training that you give. I mean, I was with one of our younger employees last week, and there was a half a pallet of product on a truck, and he had two ratchet straps. I mean, he took the time to put two ratchet straps down, and not always, you know, and those of us that have been in the industry for a long time, we didn't always used to follow didn't take the time, right? The extra, God forbid, we take 2 minutes. So
I've heard about people that
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah.
Well, you can go right down through all the OSHA regulations, and I hate to say it, but there's probably a fatality to each one of those, the reason why we have a regulation today, or some type of incident that's happened that they've made that a regulation today. So, yeah.
So what's I mean, you're on call about all the time.
24/7.
I don't know, from a Premier Ag perspective, we have the common injuries, workplace injuries, you know, what do you call them, trips and falls?
Slip, trips, and falls.
Yeah.
Another one's an eye. We take a lot of things for granted. You know, a lot of times, you know, you're wearing regular glasses and you start, okay, I'm going to do this, but then I'm going to jump over and run the grinder. And sometimes we think, okay, we'll just put on safety glasses. Well, depending on where they're grinding and how they're grinding, they may need goggles or they may need safety glasses with a face shield to help protect their eyes. We've had a few of those. Being so diverse with, you know, grain, energy with LP and liquid fuel, as well as agronomy, we get a lot of slip, trips, and falls of people twisting their ankles, stepping off their trucks, whether they're climbing down off the back, getting up on the top of their fuel truck, or checking the tent load and cleaning out the back end and climbing up on the side of the ladder of their tender truck. So 3 points of contact, you know, two hands always on the ladder and then 1 foot trying to climb down instead of trying to run down quick. In the same way on a lot of our application equipment. That's probably the biggest. We do have some on back injuries. We're also in the retail business with convenience stores. A lot of times those ladies, I mean, men and women that's in those, we get a large amount of crates. Our supplier may stack them too high and then needing some help to set things off.
So, Jerry, we talked about the slips, trips, and falls with Premier. What about the growers? On farm, what does a grower need to make sure that they're doing from a safety standpoint?
So the biggest thing on farm here lately has been entrapment, grain entrapment. used to and still is today. Also,
explain
like,
what that is.
So a lot of times we'll have, you know, the farmers have grain on-farm storage, and if their grain gets out of condition where it could bridge up above, and they're unloading, trying to get the bin empty right now, and it gets out of condition, well, then they may go in and try to either see what's wrong, and they get in the bin by not having the proper safety equipment on. They could, the bridge grain could drop, and then they could get engulfed and trapped into the grain. There's several factors that, and several things you have to do, like lockout, tagout, as far as having someone outside the bin, having the proper harness on, and line coming off of them to get into the bin. There's several other apparatuses you can buy. They come with a cost. But we're seeing a lot of farmers, I think, last I saw nationwide, there's like 15 right now that's already this year, and here we are in April.
Oh my gosh.
That's had entrapment. Now, not all those have been horror stories where they didn't come out. There's been a few where they've been rescued and pulled out, but you've got the fire department showing up. They're cutting holes in the side of the bin, trying to unload the grain. With that, you come a risk of if you cut a hole inside the bin and too much comes out on one side, you don't want the bin to collapse, you know, on the crew down below. So that's one thing where they just had several of us try to do awareness level to the farmers when we had them at some of our meetings to make them aware of some of the hazards and letting them know ahead of time. And the sad thing is a lot of people said, well, I've always done it. It's never happened to me. I know what, you know, what's going to happen. Well, it always comes back to someone close. The other big one is the power takeoffs and, you know, having your clothing on, especially early spring when we're putting on an overcoat or we've got coveralls or something on and we're reaching over things, climbing over the back of the hitch and getting too close to the power takeoff. Or if the safety boots are worn and there's some exposed on the knuckle of the U-joint, that's when we get into situations where they get caught into it. So
we're getting ready to jump in the field with some good weather coming, and it's planting time, and there's going to be a lot of activity going on. When you were talking about ammonia earlier, we have a responsibility with ammonia up to a certain point, but then the farmers eventually take it and put it on. What are the PPE requirements? I mean, I think that gets blown away just a little bit. Now, you don't accidentally get exposed. You don't unknowingly get exposed to ammonia, but you might talk about the PPO that's required, the personal protective.
Right, the personal protective equipment, the goggles, either indirectly vented or ventless goggles that need to be worn to protect their eyes. And we even assist on our employees that handle ammonia not to wear contacts. A lot of people wear contacts. You need to wear glasses. The goggles are made to fit over the stems of the glasses. Then they need to have an impervious glove that's lined. Usually they're a black or dark green in collar. Not the generic chemical gloves, which the farmer would also have to handle some of the farm chemicals, but that's not insulated enough. Then the other big thing that I stress on the farmers is a bottle of water. Have a bottle of water or two in the cab. That way, if they see an issue or get out and want to do something, the toolbar, put the bottle of water in their pant pocket or something in their pants. That way, if there's something gets in their eyes, they can get water on. The only first aid for ammonia burn is water and water all the time for the first 15, 20 minutes after ammonia burn. So the sooner you can get water on the situation, the better off it's going to be. So,
and there are water tanks on the wagons as
well. Yeah, by state law, we've got 5 gallons of water, but if any of us have ever been burnt with anhydrous ammonia, 5 gallons is not enough. You'll be wanting more after that. It's always interesting whenever I do training and I talk to the people in the room on how many of them are aware of anhydrous ammonia, if they know anyone in their family has ever gotten burnt. A lot of times it's their dad or their grandfather. And when I'm talking to the new third generation farmer and the son or grandson, and he says, I'm no longer using ammonia. I've switched to another form of nitrogen because of that. Or they're still using it, but they've learned that now when they go into a field, they're looking around as they're going around the field the first time cultivating, or even when they're knifing in the ammonia, they're looking for a pond or emergency water source. So if something would happen to me, or they're thinking about the wind direction. So if I hit a pothole or hit a washout in the field and the wagon comes disconnected and the safety valves or the safety breakaways don't react like it should and shut the system off, and I start losing product, which way is the wind going? Do I turn in the direction to where I'm upwind, get out and be able to safely shut the valve off? Or, you know, where do I go if I get burnt? Where's the nearest water source to get water on my first day?
A lot of situational awareness.
Yes.
We covered a lot of ground here with safety in just a few minutes. Jerry, I tell you what, as we go into spring here, I think you kind of summed it up there at the very end, was just situational awareness. Be aware of the
power lines, slow moving vehicles.
Yeah, yeah. The general public needs to be aware that, you know, that's the equipment's gotten bigger. Trying to share the roads haven't gotten any wider. Just be patient. You know, they're supplying the food source for the America. So we're out there trying to help and trying to support the farmer in getting the job done.
That extra 4 or 5 minutes added to your trip, if you're behind a combine or a big piece of tillage equipment,
it's
not going to make any difference.
Right.
Will it?
Right. Correct.
I think we always kind of hack on you because we certainly say we don't want your job, but it truly is all our jobs. So it's good for us to remember.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, that's all I've got. Do you have anything else?
I don't. Thanks, Jerry, for being here.
Jerry, thanks for all you do. Really do appreciate your safety leadership in the company.
No problem.
And that's all we've got for this episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you very much for listening or watching.
Thanks.